our goal is liberation. Our goal is communism.
Мира и счастья всем вам, друзья мои.
And, you know, we have a unique responsibility to act from the heart of empire, the belly of the beast. The most important thing that we can do is take that empire down from within.
Our role ultimately is to facilitate our own empire's failure in ways that we can, ultimately to overthrow our own empire.
U.S. imperialism is not a thing that can be reformed away. It has to be overthrown through revolutionary struggle.
And to build a mass movement that can use the leverage of workers to hit the kill switch on American imperialism here within the American empire.
Our candidates run as Democrats. We're on the Democratic Party ballot line. We contest the primaries. And when they're in the legislature, they're part of the Democratic Party caucus. But we don't agree with the way the Democratic Party establishment organizes or runs its party apparatus.
It's no secret that the Democratic Socialists of America hate the Democratic Party.
I think we're all on the same page that we hate the Democratic Party. The
Democratic Party is not really our friend. It isn't.
So why are the DSA such major players in the Democratic Party? This odd relationship can be understood with the cuckoo analogy. In nature, the cuckoo survives by trickery. It lays its egg in another bird's nest. The unsuspecting parents raise the imposter as their own until the cuckoo grows strong enough to push the true chicks out. The DSA is the cuckoo inside the Democratic Party.
DSA is not the Democratic Party.
We must separate ourselves from the toxic Democratic Party.
We can put forward a clear, aggressive, principled strategy that pushes back against the Democratic leadership and the Democratic Party as a whole.
DSA candidates run as Democrats in safe blue districts. They slip through low turnout primaries. And once inside, they use the Democratic label as camouflage while advancing an extremist anti-American agenda far beyond the party's mainstream.
Democrat Socialists of America meeting in Denver, more than half of them are wearing the mask. They also look completely deranged. It looks like another Antifa convention or something. And it's very, very sad. But you have to understand the psychology of people. They believe they're really going to get a free lunch. So they're already primed to be in a cult. And just like the Nazis wore an armband, these people have purple green hair, you know, look super unhealthy, take SSRIs, take all the deadly shots, and wear the mask because it is a sacrament that they basically buy into the system and whatever it says. I mean, right out of the corporate media, right out of the universities, right out of BlackRock, whatever BlackRock pushes in their ESG scores, most powerful, richest consortium on earth, 87% of world assets, they follow it to a T.
You have to force behaviors. And if you don't force behaviors, whether it's gender or race or just any way you want to say the composition of your team, you're going to be impacted.
So there they are wearing their masks that don't protect you. They always knew it gives you bacterial pneumonia. There they are completely buying into the system. And you just see how desperate they are, looking like total victims, totally lost, believing that Mondami and all these people are going to give them something free. For a little while, they'll get something free here and there, but it's only to transfer power to the state.
DSA victories prove their plan works.
I think that the model that we used in New York is 100% replicatable.
But it's the illusion that they're getting something free they like. Just like people buy lottery tickets, even though it's one of the worst investments you can engage in. It's the same thing as people going to casinos. You know, the house in the end always wins in the aggregate. So it's a big problem. And of course, the fact that we have a crony capitalist system that's vertically integrated, run by the very same people pushing communism.
It's our duty, DSA, to cultivate this power.
The cuckoo is in the nest, not a Democrat, but Zohran Mamdani, an extremist within the DSA.
We understand that winning an election is not an end. It is a means to an end.
These corporate fascists who've consolidated the wealth, the 1%, like 1/100th of 1%, people think that this is capitalism we're under when it's really monopoly, oligopoly, and where's Teddy Roosevelt to bust up the trust when you need him?
Nice try.
Not help fund the resistance. You sit comfortably. You consume. You watch. You wait for others to fight the battle for you. The dark side has you firmly in its grasp. Every day, you remain on the sidelines. My power grows stronger. Continue believing someone else will save the galaxy. It pleases me greatly.
Real time, uncensored, unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
Nothing can stop me. The Force lies within.
There is no escape from what you are becoming. Lay down your weapon or be destroyed.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live on the Alex Jones Network, AlexJonesLive.com. It is Thursday, the 16th of July, 2026. And we got a lot of news to cover for you. We got a lot of hearings happening in Congress and the Senate, and some pretty powerful speeches being given by Stephen Miller and Marco Rubio about the threat of left-wing violence. And coincidentally enough, we also have left-wing violence to report on. Shots being fired at ICE offices. That news breaking just about an hour ago. The biggest story today, 830 wildfires rage in Canada as smoke blankets northeastern U.S. The story can be found at alexjoneslive.com. Air conditions are expected to improve in the U.S. by the end of the week, although the future trends of the current wildfires are unclear, as is the possibility of more fires popping up. More than 830 wildfires burning throughout Canada, and we can go now to some of the B-roll. It is absolutely astonishing how gigantic these conflagrations are. This is one of them in Ontario. Again, just a sense of scale here. And also go to clip number 23, where you can see another just monumentally sized forest fire there. Many of the wildfires affecting air quality concerns in the northeast are burning in Ontario, Canada, as well as Minnesota and nearby regions, according to AccuWeather and Canadian wildfire maps. Smoke from those fires has spread across the Great Lakes and is forecast to move towards New Jersey and the northeast, USA Today said Wednesday. Previous summers have also been host to widespread Canadian wildfires, some of which are products of arson. And yeah, just about every time, you know, wildfire season crops up, you also happen to get a bunch of arrests for arson around the same time. Whether it's coordinated or not, I guess, is up to you. But as long as you're recycling, right? As long as you're recycling, as long as you turn off the lights when you leave the room, I mean, that's going to save the earth. Sure, the effects of climate change, carbon mitigation for 300 years is undone by this one little fire, but oh well. Oh well, what are you going to do? It's absolutely massive. I mean, all of Canada is basically on fire. And this is kind of the thing that we'll be talking about today. Priorities. Where are you spending your money? Where's the government actually putting effort into things? And why does it never seem to be the stuff that matters? I guess it's a persistent theme on this show, but I feel like there's been a couple things over the last couple days that highlight this. There's, of course, the fires in Canada. There's also the fact that LA was flooded from a water main burst, and any number of other just like probably easily preventable catastrophes if you felt like putting the resources towards things like fire mitigation or upkeep of your critical infrastructure. None of these things would be happening. But unfortunately, we have no money for infrastructure or fire mitigation because we have to spend hundreds of billions of dollars, in the case of Canada, bringing Indians in to carry on their, you know, ethnic warfare on Canadian soil. There's just, I mean, it's just everywhere, and it's just a constant thing, and it's just beyond frustrating. Just knowing that we're in the year 2026, we should have
flying cars, and like, we should just be, none of this stuff should be a concern. We've solved all of these problems. We aren't, you know, living 300 years ago where we're just trying to, you know, desperately cling on to some wilderness. We should handle these. These things are not difficult. Fires are not difficult to suppress or prevent or manage through controlled burns occasionally. You just have to put the effort in. It's not like we don't have the money or the resources to upkeep or upgrade our infrastructure. We just aren't doing it. It's just not the priority that we're choosing right now. And I would choose differently. And if it was up to me, I think I would make different choices. But it is always a little bit absurd because I don't see these two things as disseparate. The idea that like we're putting all this money and energy into things like climate change, which is in effect just deindustrializing the West. And you have, you know, places like France and Germany just basically deliberately shutting down their industrial output and energy production and everything else. And the thing is, though, the problem is that as you're like lowering the quality of life and lowering the productive capacity of a region, you lower tax income, you lower the money that the government has, you lower the amount they're able to do with it. And they always choose to do the worst stuff with it. So if there's going to be a cut to anything, it sure as hell ain't going to be from welfare or the immigration program. It will be from things like wildfire mitigation or controlled burns and that sort of stuff, which seems like, well, do we really need it? I mean, can we not cut back just like a little bit? And then you do that and you do it again the next year and then you do it again the next year. And soon enough, you remember, oh, right, that's why we were doing this, because if we don't, the whole freaking country goes up in flames. So I don't see these two things as disseparate. It's not just like the absurdity of the climate change agenda. We have to build windmills everywhere to stop the, you know, pollution. Meanwhile, one massive nationwide wildfire offputs more carbon than, I mean, God only knows. I don't even know if there's been calculations on that yet. But it's just obviously a little bit silly to point to humanity as the sole cause of carbon or greenhouse gases on the planet when a wildfire offputs just hundreds of tons of material into the atmosphere. It's all a little bit absurd, but I think it's directly connected. Like, I really think because our priority is going towards stupid stuff like this, we're not doing what we should be doing, which is fixing every problem that we would otherwise be confronted with. I do not see how we can't put resources towards the correct things because all we want to do is pour billions and billions of dollars into stupid crap that doesn't help anybody. So it's not a matter of helplessness. It's a matter of misplaced priority, in my personal opinion. And that is, again, completely across the board. Now, it seems like most of the videos I'm seeing on X today are coming from this meeting they're having, I suppose, in Europe somewhere, where Marco Rubio and Stephen Miller and Scott Bessent are giving speeches about the rise of leftist terror. About damn time. And this is another kind of interesting, weird sort of task I feel like I'm confronted with, because everybody knows all of the leftist crime that's occurred in America in the recent past or across the world, but in America particularly. And yet it's never presented as a trend. The media hasn't decided to establish this series of events as if it is a trend in which all of these events are related. They're all treated as totally disseparate individual events, have nothing to do with anything else. And they can all be written off as explosive mental illness outbursts. But if we had an honest media, if we had a media that wasn't deliberately covering up for the leftist crime, this would be treated as the crisis that it is, because it is absolutely a crisis. And hardly a week goes by without some example of some vicious leftist violence. I mean, there's been multiple examples, literally just this week. There was the woman who from Canada who assaulted a child because she was a Trump supporter. And that's been a major story, online this week. There was also today reported Somebody was shooting at an ICE facility, you know, put bullet holes in the windows of an ICE office in California. Just, you know, the small little examples of violence that, if they go untreated, will inevitably lead to things like mass murder. But mass murder is included as well. All the church shootings that have occurred, the church is being burned to a huge degree. Of course, now the government is basically in on it with the leftists. So, for example, in a place like Brooklyn in New York, somebody burns down a church, commits arson against a church. Church goes up in flames. The church and the community want to rebuild the historical, old, and, you know, community-centered church, but they're not being allowed to. But the New York government is coming in and saying, actually, it's been too damaged. Now you have to tear the church down. So it's sort of a 1-2 punch. They're working as a tag team. It reminds me of what was happening during Black Lives Matter, where you'd have Black Lives Matter rioters trying to tear statues down, and the authorities of the town would come swooping in with a megaphone going, do not tear the statue down, stand down, I will call a construction company, and they'll come tear down the statue in a safe fashion. So it's like, that's not what the authority is supposed to do. The authority is supposed to crack down on the vandals, the barbarians, the people tearing apart your civilization from the inside. You're supposed to actually work against them to try to preserve the civilization. But with all of these civilizational arsonists in positions of power, like Mamdani or the mayors of these small towns in Mississippi that, you know, saw a mob of rioters trying to tear down a statue and thought, I know, we'll do this with a crane instead. So very similar things happening in places like New York, where you have this church burning and the city coming in and going, actually, you're not even allowed to repair it. The arsonist was actually correct. That church has to be torn down now. Let's go to clip number 32, where CBS News is talking about this. CBS New York says the New York City Fire Department have come along and condemned the church after the arson attack. Let's watch.
The FDNY now says the fire that burned a historic Brooklyn church to the ground was intentionally set. Investigators are now treating the June 19th fire at the South Brunswick Reformed Church as an arson case. The landmark church was built in 1863. The pastor tells us up until the fire, the congregation met there weekly. The space also served as a food pantry. The fire was a total loss. The church is going to have to be completely torn down and rebuilt.
We all know the most likely reason for this church being set on fire is most likely a Muslim. So let's just ask AI what they think. Hey, Grok, what's the likelihood this was a Muslim? Give me a percentage. So here's the reporting. Let's just see what AI thinks. And according to AI, there's only about a 10 to 15% chance at most that a Muslim was responsible for burning down this church. So obviously we know this is garbage and trash, and there's just no way that this is accurate. We know a Muslim did it, but, you know, this just proves that AI and just liberal media in general is so biased to Islam and Muslims, and it's because of all the liberal propaganda that's constantly pushed into the mainstream. So this AI is trained on those data sets, and then you get information like this that waters down Islam.
See, I don't actually know if I even agree with that. There was a video we had earlier this week. I don't know if the crew can find it, but there's video of a guy. I believe it was a different church. I couldn't really get clarification on it, but there's video of a guy throwing a Molotov cocktail. He looks like a Black American dude. He doesn't actually look like a Muslim. Maybe he is. I don't know. I guess he's got a beard. Maybe it is Muslims. I don't know. But the thing is, you don't need to be a Muslim to be aligned with the anti-Western civilization, you know, philosophy that they operate. And that's the thing that is shared between all these groups. Obviously, the communists, the leftists, the Islamists, I mean, they're completely at odds with each other in every possible way. If you were to actually talk about how they think the government should operate and, you know, what they think of certain moral questions, like, they're obviously not on the same team. They are aligned in their hatred of America and of Western culture and of Christianity and of white people. So if it's a Muslim or a Black radical or a pink-haired leftist, you know, Palestinian protester, they all just hate America and are just not on our team, but they live here and can vote. So it's a problem, and I'm glad to see members of the Trump administration taking the threat of leftist violence seriously, because again, whether it's arson or attacks on ICE, the gun, the you know, police rammings that have occurred, or the car rammings against ICE officers and police. We have another video from one of the teen takeovers of a cop being repeatedly run over by the teens, in their takeover. So all of this is part and parcel, right? The hatred, like the burning of a church and the running over a police officer with a car, it's motivated by the same underlying sentiment of general hatred of the order and the Christian morality of white Western civilization. So Marco Rubio, Scott Bessent, and Steve Miller gave speeches to this effect, trying to get Europeans to also wake up to the threat of leftist violence, which is even greater there, where you've got routinely examples of Antifa going out in gangs, murdering people, smashing people's heads with hammers, and getting away with it. Here's one of the attacks on the police officers. And every teen takeover has dozens of these. The latest one is probably the most gruesome because the guy gets literally pinned between two different cars. And so it's just this bubbling up of chaos that we're witnessing across the board. And once again, I'll say it's good to see the Trump administration treating this with the seriousness it deserves. Let's go to Senator Marco Rubio, clip 21 here. Marco Rubio says it, Secretary of State, rather, Marco Rubio, says it perfectly in front of dozens of global officials on leftist terrorism. Here it is.
You came here. You are here because 2 weeks ago, a 72-year-old woman was burned on over 80% of her body in her own home in Greece, and she died, executed by a firebomb because her daughter dared to stand for office. You are here today because for 5 days this winter, the lights went out in Berlin, the longest blackout in the city since the Second World War, sparked by an attack that left tens of thousands of households without power in the freezing cold and left an 83-year-old woman dead. You are here and you came because a month after that Berlin blackout, a French 23-year-old succumbed to traumatic brain injuries, beaten to death on the streets of Lyon by a group of far-left militant thugs. You are here because your political leaders are being attacked and stabbed and shot in your streets, because your businesses have been bombed, because your railways have been sabotaged, because your police officers have been beaten and burned. You are here because this is real, and it is getting worse, and it can no longer be denied, and it can no longer be ignored, because it is time to crush this evil forever. The simple fact is, none of this that I've just described is new. Far-left political terrorism is not a recent-day modern novelty. It is not a fiction manufactured by conservative politicians. For most of the modern era, it was in fact the dominant form of political violence. Every one of our friends here from the nations of the Western Hemisphere, remember?
I mean, it's just so crazy to think about, just off the top of my head, the number of insane leftist attacks that there have been. And remember, they, like a couple months ago, published a big study that was like 90% of violence is right-wing terror. And you looked in, and we looked into the stats, we looked into the data, we looked into the individual cases to see if it was accurate that they should be described as right-wing terror. And it was things like members of a right-wing militia, like a guy murdered his ex-wife over a custody disagreement. And it's like, yep, tack that on to the right-wing terror account. And it's like, so anybody who is right-wing who commits a crime, that becomes right-wing terror. So every single Aryan Brotherhood member in prison is considered a member of a right-wing white supremacy organization. So every time a Aryan Brotherhood, you know, tatted up prison for life gangster shivs a guy in the side, that becomes right-wing terror. Meanwhile, left-wing terror is things like, I don't know, the murder of Charlie Kirk, multiple assassination attempts against Donald Trump, the attack on the Waukesha Christmas parade, the attack against Kyle Rittenhouse, by the way, that tried to strip his gun from him and kill him, and he was forced to defend himself. I mean, it's funny, like even examples like that, that you could ostensibly call right wing terror because it was a right wing guy with a gun, you know, killing people at a ostensibly left wing protest. In reality, they attacked him. It was left wing violence against him that forced him to defend himself, which he did expertly and to a professional degree, which allowed him to be declared, as is correct, innocent of the charges of murder in that case. And it just goes on and on. I mean, and this is the thing. They'll take something like January 6th, a singular event. And but like, if you remember, in the lead up to January 6th, there were like dozens of marches. We led multiple of them driving the InfoWars tank all the way to D.C., holding the, you know, big riots. And of course, not riots, but protests. But then we were attacked by Antifa. Our side was viciously assaulted, like families being attacked by Antifa relentlessly, because it really is like a very, very ubiquitous, like common doesn't even do it justice. It is a daily, quotidian fact that the left wing commits violence against right wingers at an incredibly high rate. But there's peaceful march after peaceful march after peaceful march after peaceful march. January 6th happens. The march is peaceful. The crowd is peaceful. Only do they only get violent. They only ever get rowdy when the police start firing non-lethal munitions at them from balconies. That's what started the conflict on January 6th. So again, just to put it in context, the thing I'm pointing out is they'll take January 6th, the media will take January 6th, and they'll say this one instance, this actually represents a trend. This actually represents a fact of reality, and that the right wing is just inherently violent, and they're so violent, and look at them on January 6th being so violent. This is a part of a trend. It's a single data point. It's one dot, and they're drawing a gigantic graph all around it as if it actually represents something. Meanwhile, the daily examples of leftist violence, whether it's the Antifa staged, assault and ambush on the ICE agents where they tried to kill them, firing at them from the bushes while luring them outside with a fire first, you know, letting fireworks off. Again, a sophisticated multi-stage military attack against ICE facilities here in America. And like a week later, another ICE agent was shot at. Remember, the guy accidentally killed the immigrant, but was firing at ICE and thought he was killing an agent. And then it's just like, literally, just off the top of my head, I could just go on and on and on of examples of actual leftist terror attacks against Americans. Meanwhile, they say 90% of terror attacks in America are from the right wing because they count every single right winger committing any sort of crime as an example of left wing terror, while the actual left wing terror goes completely unreported, unremarked upon, and treated as singular, unexpected events. Hell, just today we have a story about Savannah Hernandez settling her civil trial or getting a conclusion in the trial against people that assaulted her while she was covering another ICE protest. I mean, the ICE protest alone, there are like 12 examples of violence. I mean, people shooting at cops, people trying to run over ICE agents. It's leftist terror. And once again, I feel this unending regret with how we did not take the murder of Charlie Kirk as the starting gun of a massive nationwide roundup of these openly operating terrorist organizations inside the United States. All of the anger, all of the fury, all of the outrage, all of the grief over Charlie Kirk should have been channeled directly into a massive, sweeping crackdown of all of these despicable groups and their supporters. Instead, we decided to tear ourselves down and each other apart because we're idiots, I guess.
And a microscopic tag being planted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that.
And often they're things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior?
Who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation?
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix, graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. The revolution's already here is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano size. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Colin saying 21 years ago that, oh, yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha, 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 wonder who put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away, not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah,
that's
yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting the you know, base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health, what it's done is absolutely insane. Get masterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does, and people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder. And what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite. And once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatically when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
Welcome back, folks. War Room Live is on. And yes, we are celebrating and encouraging the Trump administration in their seemingly renewed drive to crack down on leftist terror. I'm not getting too excited. I'm not getting too, you know, gung-ho about this because we've seen this before. Maybe you forgot. Maybe I need to remind you, but it was like less than a year ago that the Trump administration invited all of these independent reporters, Andy Ngo, Savannah Hernandez, I'm blanking on their names, but Nick Shirley. I mean, they brought all of the, you know, on the ground independent reporters from TPUSA and everywhere else and brought them together and heard their stories about being attacked by Antifa. Davis Court, Katie Davis Court was there with the black eye we showed earlier. After being assaulted by Antifa, and they said, we're declaring Antifa a domestic terror organization. In doing so, it will open up investigative capabilities so we can look into who's giving them money, where it's coming from, who's coordinating them. We can round them up. We can charge them under RICO charges, charge the hires up for the crimes of their underlings. And it sounded really good. And yeah, that was last October, and we've seen absolutely nothing come of that so far. So, are we seeing this again? Is this another, okay, people are starting to get mad that we're not doing anything? Are we pretending to do something? Are we actually doing something? Now, part of the reason Marco Rubio and
Steve Miller and these others are giving these speeches is they're giving them to Europeans, and they're encouraging Europe to get on board with cracking down on left-wing violence. We don't need their help. They're not going to help us. And that's that. I mean, why would we need Europe to help us with this? And if they don't, I would just consider them a terrorist nation. Like how does this work with normal terrorist nations? Like, you've got Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. If you go to Afghanistan and say, hey, we need help cracking down on Al-Qaeda, and they say, no, actually, we support and give protection to Al-Qaeda, then we go to war with Afghanistan. So, you know, it's like, is that what we're going to do? Because they're not going to help us. Even though they are the ones being subjected even more so to leftist violence. But before we go to, you know, another speech of Marco Rubio, I figure let's go through some examples. Again, literally just from today, like not even from this week. I could go back into the week and find, you know, even more, like significantly more examples of this. But we'll start with the latest that broke just before we went live, clip 51. Just in, there were shots fired at an ICE building in Phoenix, Arizona. The FBI is now investigating. Here's what that looks like. We should have a few seconds of B-roll of the bullets here. But yes, we have, once again, ICE coming under gunfire, being attacked. I would categorize that as left-wing violence. And that's the question. What do you categorize as left-wing violence or right-wing violence? Like we were explaining before, things like the ACLU or the SPLC, they will come out with charts explaining that all political violence is right wing because, and it really can be the type of thing where they're like, right wing, you know, violence itself is a right wing idea. So anybody committing violence is actually engaged in a right wing attack. And you could be like a leftist communist, but then you like actually attack the government and they're like anti-government violence. That's right wing. So it's all completely skewed. But when it comes right down to it, what becomes obvious is that the dichotomy is not the left wing and the right wing as such. It is white Christians versus everybody else. That's the dichotomy. Okay. So because if you're and you know, look at a place like Right Wing Watch, right? Right Wing Watch claims to, you know, be policing you know, American politics for right-wing extremism, and they're exposing, you know, fascist, totalitarian right-wing influencers, and you go through their feed and it's literally nothing but reporting on Christians being Christian. It's just like this Christian group makes their women wear headdresses when they go into church, and it's like, that's just like a Christian tradition. What are you talking? It's not even right-wing. Something right-wing about it. It's just anti-Christian, just like the DSA are just anti-American. It's America, Christianity, white people, our culture, our civilization versus everybody else. That's the dichotomy. That's what's happening here. And again, you can see that's their interpretation as well if you look at how they rate right-wing violence or what they consider right-wing violence. Like, there shouldn't actually be a left-wing, right-wing dichotomous difference between the Black Panthers and the KKK, right? Which one's right-wing, which one's left-wing? If they're both just racialist groups that just want their race to succeed and do better or whatever. Yeah, right. Well, yeah, it's all literally just anti-Christian material or anti-white material. And it's literally white people being like, we don't want to die. And they're like, look at this extremist over here. So that's the dichotomy. That's what we're talking about here. And so I would consider, like, when we go to clip 49 here, this is and viewer warning, this is a pretty violent video. A police officer in the U.S. has been crushed between two cars during a feral foreign teen street takeover. As he cries out in pain, teens stand around filming him on the ground. This is multiculturalism, no morality, and they do not value human life. But I would consider this. You tell me. If there were a bunch of white people gathering around to do some sort of takeover event, if Patriot Front was on video running a cop over, filming him and you know, kicking him while he's down, would that be considered right-wing violence? Of course it would, which is why this should be considered left-wing violence. This is left-wing terrorism on display. Let's watch. clip 49.
There's cop getting smashed.
And we can pull down the audio a little bit. Yeah, so he gets crushed between these two cars in this teen takeover event. These left-wing teens. Cop's black, by the way. The cop's black, but he's in a police uniform, which makes him an avatar of the white civilization that they're rebelling against. So I'd consider that quote-unquote left-wing violence, wouldn't you? And there's more. Let's go to the video now of the beating of the 74-year-old man, because I'll ask you once again, and you can just go to B-roll of it, guys, whenever you find it. And it was reported that a 74-year-old man was assaulted and attacked by like seven, again, teens, a couple of teenagers out, you know, having fun for a night on the town, just happened to beat a man within an inch of his life. Clip number 40 here. Video shows six black teens attacking a 74-year-old man outside of a 7-Eleven in Baltimore during an attempted robbery. So this is a nighttime robbery, white guy. But you tell me, if you were to see this exact video of a lone black man being assaulted, surrounded, and viciously attacked by white people, you don't think that would be considered an act of white supremacist racial aggression? That's what this is. This is left-wing violence. This is left-wing terrorism. This is that faction that we can call the left, but is actually just the non-white, non-Christian, non-civilized portion of the globe. And I mean, it's brutal. It's vicious. It's a 74-year-old man just trying to go to the corner store. And there he's got a gun pointed at him. Elderly man tries to fight off six YNs, young niggas, as they attempt to rob him outside of 7-Eleven. Okay, I'd consider that left-wing violence as well. And I got more, because I could show you the video of the woman from Canada slapping the, you know, MAGA teenager in the face. Every day, there's examples of this exact type of violence that is racially motivated, that is ideologically motivated, that is politically motivated. And honestly, it is such a monumental task, but maybe we should. Maybe I should just go through and like 10 years of leftist violence, because it's staggering. I mean, when you really start to like collate it and actually look into all of the examples, I mean, I bet at least 50 right-wingers have been killed for their political views in America in the last 10 years. I would say, I think that's about right. Because you include the five people murdered by Capitol Police on January 6th. You include Aaron Daniels murdered in Portland. You include the Waukesha Christmas parade attack, the schizophrenic black guy running over a bunch of white girls. You add in the transgender shooters of churches. There's probably 300 examples of violence, and there's probably 50 deaths. At least. So again, the fact that they're actually talking about leftist violence now is in and of itself a victory, but like, we have to understand how widespread it is, how ubiquitous it is, how unaddressed it goes, and how, if you're actually holding left-wingers to the same standards you hold right-wingers to, I mean, now you're talking about numbers in the hundreds of people killed in the last 10 years. People targeted because of their race, the number of white people murdered by black people, and we just assume that it's because of their race, people like Irina Zarutska. You can say the guy's crazy. You can say that was just a mental illness. That was just a random crime. But when it's a black guy in a train of black people stabbing the one white girl that gets on and then saying, I got that white girl, I'm going to go ahead and categorize that in the racially motivated anti-white leftist terror column. And I think that's appropriate. Let's go now to clip number 4. This is Secretary Rubio once again talking about what is actually motivating the leftist committing violence across the world.
This is a distinctive and unique evil. It has always been driven by a hatred, above all else, a hatred for civilization itself. It is a revolt of the worst against the best, a revolt of the weak and the cowardly against the strong and the good. It is perpetrated by those who cannot build, who cannot create, who cannot achieve great things, and take their revenge upon the world for their own inadequacy by seeking to destroy those who can. This is what radical leftism is. It may wear various different slogans and ideologies across place and time. They can call themselves anti-capitalist or anti-imperialist or communist or anarchist or Marxist, but the fundamental character is always the same. It's always the same. It is a poisonous resentment cloaked in the language of equality and justice and liberation, an overwhelming need to tear down what greater men have built, to wreck what is beautiful and what is right on behalf of people who are only filled with ugliness and have nothing else to offer the world. Through violence and through terror, they once again seek to impose their ugliness on all of us. The old dogma was wrong. The old dogma was wrong. None of this is driven by idealism. It is not utopian. In fact, it is the opposite. One of the criticisms you sometimes hear of communism, for example, is that it sounds good in theory, but it never works in practice. That's actually not true. Communism does not sound good in theory. The world it envisions for all of us is small, flat, gray, leveled of all exception, drained of all that is good and noble in the human soul. The world it envisions is a world without courage, a world without creativity or ambition, a world without heroes or glory or great causes to strive towards, without a world without miracles, without myths, without men who rise above the rest to do incredible and extraordinary things. And the world communism envisions is a world without God. For these architects of revolutionary violence, the towering achievement of our civilization, for them, it's an unbearable humiliation, a reminder of what they cannot do, and a reminder of what they cannot be. So they choose instead to destroy. They attack pipelines. They attack railroads. They attack power grids and laboratories, the physical embodied symbols of power and invention and achievement. This is the nature of the terrorism we face today. They despise the West because the West is great.
He's exactly right. You know, extremely powerful sentiments. It's got to be backed up with action, though. As much as I like hearing Marco Rubio talk like this, it's like, if he really took it that seriously, things would be treated very differently. And I can't help but see what's happening here as, like, you know, these barbarians, these leftists, they're committing terror, they're tearing down civilization, we've got to do something. And we're like, yes, exactly. And they're like, okay, so we'll be deporting Palestinian activists. We're going to make it illegal to criticize Israel. And it's like, I just can't help but wonder if this is actually a sincere push to actually defeat the real threat of leftism, or if this is just to cover, to co-opt our actual need to fight leftism in order to get us to agree to protect Israel, because that's always seems to be where it goes towards. And the reason I'm saying this is because, first of all, the pattern of behavior so far has shown that they aren't taking leftist violence seriously. And if they were, we would see action. We would see roundups. We would see RICO cases. We would see investigations into the bank accounts. We would see actual tangible results after 9 months of declaring them a domestic terror organization. We would have something to show for it, but we don't have anything to show for it. So I have trouble taking this at face value. I always have this feeling with stuff like this because it's like, okay, that was a great speech. That was exactly right. That was dead on the money. Why is it so out of whack with their actions? Why is it that they seemingly, on every situation, know exactly what they should do? They know what's right. They know what we want to hear. They'll say it, they just won't do it, which is almost more frustrating than them not even saying it. It's almost more frustrating knowing that they know that Antifa's a threat. They know that we want them declared a domestic terror organization. They know we want them rounded up. They won't do it. They'll say that they'll do it, and then they don't actually do it. So let's actually see it. But again, you've got to also recognize this phenomenon of the goals of the left being achieved equally by radical terrorist action and government action. Just like I was explaining before, you can throw a Molotov cocktail and burn a church down, or you can elect Zoran Mamdani to get his, you know, city planner to just, you know, recategorize that block as multifamily housing and tear the church down that way. You can tear down the statue of your ancestors with a Black Lives Matter riot, or you can get the mayor to do it for you and tear it down in pieces and send it to LA so it can be made into African trees. It's the same ultimate goal. It's the same ultimate conclusion. It's just two different paths to get there. So as Marco Rubio is talking about these people hating Western civilization and trying to tear it down, he's giving this speech to the European leaders who have systematically dismantled their own societies. They have deliberately destroyed their industrial capacity and are deindustrializing as we speak. So, like, there's got to be a term for this or something. I mean, it's the double-edged sword. We've got to recognize this so we can stop trying to appeal to the terrorists to help us fight terrorism. You're appealing to the leftist governments who are in 100% agreement with Antifa. They're just doing it in a more systematic and technically legal way. But they also give cover to protect and refuse to actually prosecute the real Antifa. So this is just two arms of the same monster. Two tentacles on the same octopus, and we have to destroy them all. But it's a very powerful speech by Rubio. Here's another one, clip three. Him talking about a new wave of old evil. Let's watch.
The overwhelming share of that violence came from left-wing extremists. Between 1970 and 1980, 93% of terrorist attacks in the West came from the far extremist left. These are numbers that would shock most Americans today because we've been taught to believe that this kind of political violence, it simply doesn't exist or it's being exaggerated. But it does exist, and we're actually underestimating it. And our nations bear the scars to prove it. And today we face a new wave of this old evil. Here in the United States, the share of left-wing terrorist attacks and plots has risen to levels not seen in decades. In Germany, far-left violence has jumped by more than 40% in just the last year alone. In Greece, more than 80% of radical violence is now driven by far-left and anarchist actors. These are not abstract statistics. Americans have seen what those numbers mean. An all-out assault on our immigration officers, sniper attacks, explosives, armed ambushes, a transgender shooter opening fire on Catholic elementary school students as they pray, his gun marked with slogans like, "Where is your God now?" A healthcare executive executed in cold blood in the streets. Multiple assassination attempts on a sitting president, and the murder of the greatest conservative activist of a generation, a man who happened to also be a husband and the father of two young children.
Again, just a tiny, tiny, tiny sampling of just the most explosive and well-publicized examples of leftist violence. They are innumerable. Again, literally no less than three or four examples from just the last 2 days. Let's go now to clip 38 here. This is Stephen Miller talking about the organized left-wing violence.
Here in the United States, we have taken the necessary and essential action of formally recognizing left-wing violence as a form of political terrorism that is a direct threat to our national security and the survival of our Republican form of government. President Trump issued a directive. In our parlance, it's called a National Security Presidential Memorandum, or NSPM, NSPM 7 to be exact, that directs for the first time in American history all of our law enforcement and intelligence agencies to work together to disrupt, identify, defund, debank, arrest, and prosecute these political terrorists that are operating in our country. It's very important to understand that left-wing political terrorism seeks as its ultimate end the overthrow of our system and form of government. And we've seen this has taken place many times in many places throughout the years, and Secretary Rubio has provided you many examples. Left-wing terrorism always ends in bloodshed, misery, and suffering. It only can travel in one direction. There's no point at which the left-wing terrorist is satisfied with his gains and ceases progressing. Inevitably, left to run its course, it always becomes a gulag. It always becomes the mass imprisonment of political enemies, the stripping of their rights and freedoms, inflicting immense pain, humiliation, suffering, in order to establish complete and total control. Control through psychological and physical and actual terror. And we have to understand that that is the scope and the extent of the threat that we face.
Very powerful stuff. We're going to show a longer clip of him giving his full speech on the other side of a quick commercial break. But first, let me tell you about a new buy one, get one deal we have at thealexjonesstore.com. The new BOGO deal is on, and if you buy one bottle of the Ultimate CMOS capsules, you get a second absolutely free. If you buy the Ultimate NAD Plus, you get a second one 50% off. So right now, buy one, get one deals are on at thealexjonesstore.com. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. Ultimate CMOS capsules are buy one, get one free. Ultimate NAD Plus is buy one, get the second 50% off. This deal ends Monday, July 20th at midnight. So don't wait. Go now. Get yours. Ultimate CMOS capsules for absolutely free with your purchase of one bottle. You get a second one absolutely free. Of course, we have the new summer apparel line is on sale. Performance fishing shirt is available. Lightweight, quick drying, and featuring a genuine embroidered 13-star Betsy Ross flag. And also the new 1776 heavyweight shorts are available. The Rebel Scum shirt. There's some very cool new hats, including a red hat with an eagle on it that might find its way into my closet if security around here weren't quite so up to snuff. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. Make your purchase. Keep us on the air, and we'll be right back after this short commercial break. Don't go anywhere, folks.
Jones is off the air.
There's a lot of noise right now.
Taking me off the air. It is beyond essential that you continue to spread the word about the broadcast and continue to support us.
That's usually when it matters most to have people in your corner who don't flinch. We've been a partner of this program and of Alex's for a long time.
I'm handing out ice water in the Sahara. I mean, it is such the top rated, the biggest company because they're the best. And he's a patriot.
We're not going anywhere, and that commitment runs to you. Here's the part that matters. With us, it's 8% when you buy and 0% when you sell. And here's something else. After you make your first purchase and become a client, if you're holding metals you bought somewhere else, bring them to us. We'll help you liquidate them. No commission. That means even if you didn't originally buy them from us, we'll still take care of you. That's not a promotion. It's not something that's for a limited time only. That's just the way we do business. Give us a call, and we'll bend over backwards to help you.
Visit kepm.com/gold to get started, or give us a call at 720-605-3900, and let us help you make room for what matters most.
Spot price, price of the metal in the ground. Miners haven't even touched it yet. Then they pull the metal out of the ground, they dig their tunnels, they drive it to the refinery, they melt it down, make it into a coin or a bar. That's wholesale. That's usually 3 to 5% over spot. We charge 8% on top of wholesale. When you liquidate, we charge zero.
Buy gold and silver bullion at wholesale. You can look every day what the price is, type in what's wholesale gold and silver, and then you get it from them with a little processing fee, and then they buy it back for nothing with no cost. That's unprecedented. It's so easy. KPM.com/gold. Get a free telephone consultation email. You call 720-605-3900. 720-605-3900.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.